Shall we jump in?
Yes, please.
All right. So number one, what is the most important question to ask in defining a narrative arc?
Okay. This one, I have kind of two different answers. I think the most important question to ask in terms of like what's going to happen, kind of the nuts and bolts, would be what does the protagonist want? What do they want to achieve? But the way to kind of structure their transformative arc would be, the question to ask would be, what can they do at the end of the film that they could not do at the beginning of the film? So I kind of didn't know which one you were going for, but like, anyway, that.
Yeah. No, I think that covers it. I think that's pretty much covers the base. It's about change, and it's about how that transformation works. Okay. Next question. What is the length and purpose of each of the three acts?
Okay. Act one is 25% of the film, roughly. Sometimes a little less, but around there. And its purpose is to introduce the characters, especially the protagonist, and to start them on their quest. I mean, there's other things it's doing as well, like introducing the world of the film, might be introducing the main idea of the film, but in a character-driven film, that's the main purpose.
Okay.
That's act one. Act two is a little more than 50% of the film, and its purpose basically is to throw up obstacles in the way of that quest, generally increasing in difficulty and intensity. And then act three is a little under 25% of the film. It's the shortest of the three acts, and its purpose is to bring the quest to a climax at which it's actually answered, does the protagonist achieve that quest or not?
And
there's often a denouement after that, which will kind of let us down from that. And I mean, there's another question about that, I think, later on, but let us down from that, yeah. And like show the new world state, you know, after the quest is achieved and so on.
I think that covers it. I the only thing that I might add to that is I would, and this is sort of outside of the structural elements, but I think one of the other important purposes of the first act is to also to establish the tone and the style of the film, of the film.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What is an inciting incident?
Exciting incident is an external event that happens which sets the protagonist upon their quest.
Great. Can you give any examples of an exciting incident, either hypothetical or from a specific film or something like that?
Sure. Yeah. Let's see. Okay, so I'm thinking of a film that I edited called Detour. So in the first act, we meet this drummer in a rock and roll band. It's kind of a double banger inciting incident, because there are two things that happen. The drummer finds out he has kidney failure and needs to go on dialysis, and also finds out that his band is just starting to make it and they need to do this big tour to support their new album. So that sets up his quest, which is to complete the tour and not die, basically, to try to do dialysis on the road and complete this tour. So and the rest of the film is all just following that quest, and we'll answer that question, does he make it to the end of that tour?
Great. Yeah. Awesome. That sounds perfect. So what is a protagonist's statement of desire? And I think I'll let you answer it.
Yeah, so it's when the protagonist actually states for us what they want to achieve, you know, what's the goal they want to achieve in the film. So particularly important in a documentary film, because you don't have as many of the dramatic tricks that you normally would have. Like in a dramatic film, the character might say it to their best friend at a bar, but as a documentary filmmaker, you probably weren't there in that bar. So actually just having them state it to cameras.
Yeah.
To make that clear.
Great. So what is an act climax?
That climax is the most emotionally intense moment of that act, and it typically happens right before the end of the act. And typically there's like a little sort of a come down from that, where we kind of calm down from that climax before launching off into the next act.
Great. Ideally, where do the three act climaxes fall in a film that's 100 minutes long?
Okay, so the first one, I think we want to say 24 minutes, because if the act one is 25 minutes, you want to give it that minute to come down from that, prepare for the second act. The act two climax was around the 80 minute mark, again, right around the end of act two, but not quite at the end. And the act three climax is around 95 minutes, giving, you know, more than a minute, like 2 or 3 or even 4 minutes to come down from that climax and have a real denouement. And yeah, I think there's a question about denouement later, but yeah.
good answer. What are three criteria for a great third act climax?
Okay, so if each act climax is the most emotionally intense moment of that act, the third act one should be the most emotionally intense moment of the entire film. Mm-hmm. So very emotionally intense. It should ideally resolve the question of, is the protagonist going to achieve their quest or not? So they should either achieve it or not. And the third part is that it should very actively involve the protagonist. It shouldn't be just like, oh, they're trying to get this thing and then someone just gives it to them with no effort on their part. It should ideally require them to put forth their biggest, their most supreme effort, you know, of their entire life, preferably, in order to either achieve the goal or not. And then ideally also, in doing so and in putting forth that supreme effort, they complete their character change. So they've changed from, you know, from one version of themselves to a new version of themselves.
Great. Excellent. What is a reversal?
Okay, so a reversal is where the tone or the mood of a film shifts completely. It's frequently used in the second act and frequently used to sort of add drama or add a bit of life to the second act. Oftentimes it'll be used right before the end of the second act, which is the second act climax is usually a moment of extreme conflict, like the biggest conflict the protagonist has had to go through so far. So it's kind of a break from all the conflict of the second act and to inject some life and humor. And if you do it right before the second act climax, it can make that climax appear that much bigger and more dramatic. Because we just had this kind of reprieve from the conflict right before it. And then the second act climax really whacks us in the face, even more because of that.
Okay. Great. I think that more or less covers it. So what should you keep in mind when positioning a backstory?
Okay, so backstory is also often used in the second act and often to increase, like ideally the backstory should increase the drama of the second act. So, even better, what it should do is it should be a piece of backstory that raises the stakes of a scene that comes right after it. So there was a great example that Karen brought up in her course of in Some Kind of Monster, the Metallica film, where they, a piece of backstory was about Metallica versus Napster. Basically, Metallica did a big lawsuit against Napster for giving away their music for free, which on the one hand seems kind of reasonable, but their fans got really pissed off at them for doing that. And so it was Lars Ulrich, the drummer, that was leading that effort. And so we get that piece of backstory right before they're trying to make a decision, I think, like whether to go on tour. And so that'll be like confronting their fans again, like their fans who are still angry about this Napster thing. So it gives us information. It's a dramatic scene, giving us a lot more information, especially about Lars Ulrich, but also raising the stakes of what's about to happen next in the sort of current timeline. So
great. Yeah, no, excellent. What is the purpose of the denouement?
The denouement.
The denouement.
denouement, yeah. as we say in French.
Yes.
So it's to let the audience come down from the Act Three climax, which is supposed to be the most emotionally intense moment of the film, to just give them a chance to come down from that before the credits roll and they have to leave the theater. And another purpose is to show what the new world is like now that the quest has been achieved, like what effect did that have on the world of the protagonist or even the world, the bigger world in general. So,
yeah, excellent. Good. What are the four steps to charting character transformation?
Okay, so step one is to define what the transformation is and define it as a polarity shift. For instance, mm-hmm. a character might go from being very passive to very assertive. The second step would be to define figure out what a midpoint scene would be. And that typically is a scene with a great conflict for the protagonist. It's in the middle of the second act, and it oftentimes or ideally will be a kind of a life or death crisis, either literally life or death or life or death of a relationship or an institution or something else, that there's some real stakes behind it. And it's typically the point at which the protagonist really begins to make their change from one polarity to the other, like from passive to assertive, for instance. Mm-hmm. Then the third step would be to define or write three or four scenes that happened before that, which established the sort of initial self, the initial version of that character. For instance, the passive version of that character would be set up in those three or four scenes. And then after the midpoint, one or two scenes that chart their change, in this case to the more assertive person after this midpoint crisis. And that should culminate in the third act climax should be the last one of those scenes where they put forth a supreme effort and where we see the fully formed new version of themselves is finally there at that third act climax. And they've had to get there in order to achieve what they wanted to. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I think that covers it. What is a midpoint?
Okay, so midpoint. So it's halfway through the second act, the right in the middle of the film. It's a crisis, a conflict and crisis for the protagonist. As I was saying, ideally a life and death crisis, either literally, like their own life is in danger. Or it could be like in the Metallica Some Kind of Monster documentary, it was the life or death was the life or death of the band. Like, is the band going to survive? Mm-hmm. So it could be that's the life or death of a relationship or a group that they're part of. And as we previously said, it's frequently a point at which the protagonist begins their transformation to their new self.
So. Great. Yeah. Good. Yeah, I would also add that it's often the point too where the tension will start ratcheting up after the midpoint, where it can be sort of the stakes can be lighter at that point, and then the midpoint happens, and that's when sort of the ascent or descent into Act Three kind of begins.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. The tension ratchets up, the pacing a lot of times,
right,
as well. What is a protagonist's statement of transformation?
Okay, so that's when the protagonist actually tells us how they have changed throughout the movie, and again, changed from this one polarity to the next. So an ideal one would be, you know, something along the lines of like, I used to be so passive, and now I can't believe how assertive I am. Like,
yeah,
and that if that was their shift. So
great. What are two ways to structure docs with multiple protagonists, and which is preferable?
Okay, so the first way would be to tell the story of each protagonist from beginning to end and finish it and then go on to the next one. The second way would be to interleave them. So in other words, tell the beginning of protagonist one story and then tell the beginning of protagonist two story. And then the beginning of protagonist three story, there are three of them, and then go until the middle of the protagonist, and so on, go back and forth between them. And generally speaking, that the latter one is more complex, but it's generally preferable because you all three stories build an intensity at the same time. And so if you cut back and forth in the right kind of way, the tension and conflict in one story can reinforce the tension or conflict in another story. Where you wouldn't do it is sometimes that becomes just too confusing for the audience, especially if the individual stories are quite complicated with a lot of like details and so on. So in that case, even in that case, what you can try is just making the installments longer. So instead of cutting to one character for like 2 minutes and then to the other character, try cutting to for 5 minutes or even 10 minutes before you. And if that doesn't work, then you abandon it and go back to the to approach A of just telling the whole story in one go. So,
okay. What is an essay-style documentary and how does it differ from a character-driven documentary?
Okay, so an essay-style documentary is a film about ideas, where the ideas are the most important thing. And unlike a character-driven documentary, it does not have a main protagonist that's undergoing a big change throughout the film.
Okay, yeah. I think that can happen. What are three classic ways of structuring essay style films?
Okay. This one, honestly, I'll give my answer. I'm not exactly sure if it's the answer you're looking for, but the first way would be just a classic essay style film. We'll have three parts in it, and I think Karen likes to call them parts, not acts, because they're essays. Essays, they're not character transformations, so it's not the Hollywood kind of formula. But part one will introduce a central question or a central thesis that the film is about, and then part two will examine, so if it's a question, part two will be different possible answers to that question. So for instance, Karen gave the example of who killed the electric car. The main question is who killed the electric car, and then who is like all the different potential culprits of who might have done it. And then part three usually kind of extends the scope of the film, like maybe from a national scope to an international scope, or offers a solution if the film is about a problem. It takes the film in a different direction. It takes the essay in a different direction. So that'd be the first way to structure an essay film. The second way would be if you do have a character in there that is undergoing some kind of an arc, but it's still an essay film, the ideas are still dominant, then you would kind of, I mean, this is why I'm not entirely sure it's the answer you're looking for, because the structure would actually be the same. It would still be part one, part two, part three, but you would wrap in a protagonist, their transformation as well. So probably in part one, you'd also do act one for that protagonist, setting up their what their quest would be. And in part two, you'd also do act two for the protagonist, throwing up obstacles in the way of their quest and so on. And in part three, the protagonist would achieve or not achieve their goal. And the essay film would take the film in a different direction at the same time. So, typically what you do is you look for which mode, whether it's essay or character driven, is the strongest, is what you're really trying to say with the film. Mm-hmm. And you wrap the other one, so you use that as your dominant structure and then wrap the other one.
Right.
So that'd be kind of like a hybrid, I guess, would be number two. And the third way would be, I think Karen calls it like an evolving question documentary. And she gives us the example of Bowling for Columbine, where one question, which might seem almost more sort of innocuous, like I think his opening question was like, why would a bank sell guns? Like that might be a question, but then the answer to that leads to another question, and the questions keep evolving until the final question is kind of the question that you is perhaps a more is the biggest question of the film, and more the question that you were leading to all along.
That sounds good. Yeah, and I think that was pretty accurate. I think the way, and I don't think this is necessarily Karen's terms, but the way I've always looked at it is that sort of hybrid version. It's really like an A story and a B story, and that the essay is usually the A story, and the sort of whatever characters version is the B story, and you balance the two. Mm-hmm. In that method.
This is a fun discussion, and honestly, I feel like we're going to be having a little bit more of this kind of, like, in the context of this film, it certainly looks like it's going to be an essay film. In fact, I don't even see it being a hybrid right yet, because I don't see any evidence that there's any character transformation, but that's part of the discussion I'll be having.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Just ask about
exactly.
That.
If he is the host, is there an arc in there? Does he change at any point?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And maybe he does. But I didn't see that in any of the clips that they showed so far. So
What is an assembly cut, and how does it differ from a rough cut?
Okay, so an assembly cut, you take your best footage, or typically, especially your best interviews, and place them all in a cut that's no more than 140% of your final running time. And you're kind of just testing out whether you have the footage you need to create the film you want to create. And you don't typically have B-roll or music or narration or special effects or titles or any of that kind of thing. And then whereas a rough cut, it's shortened to more like 120% or less of your final length. So no more than 20% over. And you have started to introduce B-roll, narration, music, and you're really starting to work on the structure of the film and trying to get the structure done. By the end of the rough cut stage, the structure should be pretty much locked in place. So.
Sure. Yep. That nailed it, I think. What four things must happen in a great film introduction, i.e. the first 7 minutes or so?
Okay, so ideally a really visually gripping or emotionally gripping scene, or ideally both, should happen to really grab the audience's attention.
Mm-hmm.
You should introduce the protagonist, and not just introduce them, but introduce them in a way that we feel connected to them. And you know, either rooting for them, or but at least fascinated by them, even if we're not rooting for them. Another thing is to introduce the world of the film and the main idea of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And the final thing would be to kind of cover the grammar of the film, like all of the different elements you'll be using. Like, for instance, if you're using animation, you should try and use it in the first 7 minutes. If you're using titles in an innovative way, then do that in the first 7 minutes. If you're using a particular kind of B-roll or archival, then cram that all somehow, which is the puzzle, right?
Yeah.
Figure out a way to get all of those bits at least a little bit in the first 7 minutes or so, just so the audience doesn't get confused if animation suddenly pops up at 30 minutes and like, whoa, this feels like a different movie than the one I thought I was watching. So
yeah, excellent. Cool. Yeah, very well done. Very well done. I thought you you pretty much nailed that. Well done.
Thank you. Yes.